You're listening to episode 218 of Women Worldwide. Everybody has a story to share today, but how much do you invest in your writing? Should you be focused on the creative, or is it the data analytics, or maybe it's both? I've got a guest today who has a lot to share on this topic, so stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Whether you are listening on iTunes or Google Play, or you are now watching us on video, just want to thank you for always tuning in, for supporting us, and in one word, helping us to grow. And before I introduce my very special guest, on that note of growing and the network, I just want to give a shout out to all the listeners in Washington, D.C. You are such passionate listeners, and actually, Washington, D.C. is now an area of the country that has our largest listener base. And a special shout out to Raquel Romero, because she is on the Women Worldwide team and she's in Washington, D.C. Okay, my special guest today is Rebecca Iliff. And I met Rebecca in New York City. I'll never forget. It was when I had gotten over this horrible rash, Rebecca. And I didn't want to cancel. I wanted to meet you. But Rebecca, at the time, was the chief strategy officer of AirPR. She had launched another business previously called Talk Tech, and was advising them. And when we met, we talked a lot about public relations and marketing analytics. But what really stood out about Rebecca was her writing. Rebecca, you're also a contributor to Entrepreneur. Correct. And Rebecca has just launched a new business based on compelling stories and investing in writing, which is that's my passion. Her new company is Write Vest. So, Rebecca, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning from Nashville.
Yes, from Nashville. Looks like it's bright and sunny in Nashville.
It is. It is. Spring has come, finally.
I know.
I'm happy about that.
Me too. And I am so happy that you are my first video guest.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to, I was telling my husband this morning, I think the interview with you in New York Times, Times Square, New York.
That's right.
Was the last interview I did before I kind of went off the grid for a couple of years. So this is really exciting for me, and this is very, you know, meaningful, and I'm really appreciative of my chance to talk with you this morning. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And it's super meaningful for me too. We go way back. And I also have this comfort that if I mess up, the first video show, you'll just carry me.
It's going to be fine. It'll be what it is. It doesn't have to be perfect.
That's right.
Because I'm with
you. We are so not perfect. The beauty of it. But so Rebecca, I mentioned that you had built your one company, which is a communications PR company. Right. Then you were a co-founder and you helped to build AirPR. You've since left that company and you now launched Write Vest. So why Write Vest and why now? Why the pivot to this company?
I think it's really kind of a culmination of the last 20 years of my career. As you mentioned, I co-founded a PR comms firm in LA with a good friend of mine, Kristen, in 2008, and then moved really onto the technology side of communications and built AirPR, now on Inclusive. Super excited.
Oh, that's right.
We announced that last week. And, you know, I took a couple years off, as you know, for personal reasons, and And during that time, I really just explored, you know, what are the things that I'm kind of naturally inclined to do? What do I love? And where's my passion, I think, in terms of helping other people understand things that are important? So I did that with analytics and measurement. And really what it boiled down to is I just think now there's such a need for thoughtful writing and critical thinking, because we're moving so quickly. So now, you know, there's a need for people who can kind of step back and give an outside perspective on things and then come in and tell a thought-provoking story. So, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have a pretty well-rounded network of writers and also potential clients. So really just added, you know, kind of said, this is what I'm doing. And I have now a few writers that work with me on projects and a handful of clients, keeping it really, you know, kind of tight and close to the vest. But people need it. You know, people need good writing. And those who understand the complexities of business and industries and can connect those dots. Because I think when you're in, I mean, this is at least was my experience at AirPR, was that when things started moving so quickly, you kind of lose this perspective of your customer, or you can lose the perspective of your customers and communicating in a way that, that is more thoughtful. So I think there's a need for that. And, I mean, it's going really well. That's so far.
That's so great to hear. Yeah. You know, you mentioned losing the perspective. I know that when you were at AirPR, there was a lot of focus on the data, the analytics. We've had these conversations, the importance of professionals understanding how to use the data and to dive in. But then there's that creative side. You're a writer and you're super creative. What do you feel like you took forward from your days at AirPR? Is it more of the analytics, or did that actually make you want to look at the creative side of storytelling?
Yeah, I mean, where do I start? There's so many things I took away from that experience that have improved my understanding of, first of all, what it takes to be a good communicator. And I think that when you are in the, I'm going to use air quotes, well, people can see me. So communications, well, my hands look really big. Go back here. The communications industry, just because you're a good communicator doesn't necessarily mean you know how to write things that are compelling or create content that's compelling. So it's like learning how to translate that into a systematic approach to messaging and talking to your customer base. So what I really gleaned from, you know, looking at really millions of data points was that at the end of the day, different types of content are conducive to different types of messages and different types of customers. And to try to put something into one bucket with one silver bullet is a fool's errand. And I think that every person that's in the industry knew this, but now with insights and with enough data, and that is, you know, statistically significant, it kind of validates things that you already knew. And so for me, that was truly an exciting experience. And then also knowing there is room for this, there is a need for good writing and thoughtful content, and the press release is sometimes effective, but really not the most effective form of communicating a story. You know, and I think we just live, whether unfortunately or fortunately, we live in a data-driven world, business world. And I think there's a, you know, there's something to be said for, you know, on in a personal sense, not trying to be so driven by data and analytics, you know, but on the professional side, this is what is required of communicators now. So we need it to be able to guide us in our decision-making.
Absolutely. What about, so we're both in public relations and marketing, and you know, you mentioned the press release, and PR was always known for news releases and that broad distribution. And suddenly our world changed because of social media. And you had all of these journalists and all of these bloggers. So how do you see, for all those listeners out there who say, what is PR? Is it just publicity? Where does PR fit in? Because when I had an agency, and we're talking years back, and we grew our agency, I think I was there for 13 years, PR was not, we were not the sizzle. Even though we were the writers, sizzle came from marketing. But we were there to communicate and to send out the news releases and to do the pitching. So where does PR fit in tonight?
A $1 million question. So I think I want to start by saying I think that PR is both one of the most challenging industries and also one with the most opportunity. Because, and again, you know, during my time at I'm just going to start saying Unclusive because now it's Unclusive, but my time at Unclusive, formerly Air PR, there it's the industry, even in that 5-year period, changed from, you know, being mostly media relations and event driven to social media, thought leadership, you know, really even like kind of account based marketing, employee communications. And so I think that now the role of PR is to adapt and be flexible to where comms is needed most. So I'll give you an example. We're working on a project now with a security awareness training company called Ningio. And I'm not doing media relations, but we've done all the messaging architecture. And we essentially wrote all of the new copy for their website. And we built their thought leadership platform from that. We've built account-based marketing assets. We're going to be doing a growth story, which will get pitched to media. So I'm not a PR person really anymore because I really, it's driven by the writing. But the point is, it's all considered public relations because on some level, you're responsible for what is going out to the core constituents. And so I think that, and a lot of my friends now who are PR agency owners are saying the same thing. I mean, you have to look at what the client needs, and then you have to say, okay, based on that assessment, I think you need, you know, a social channel development, you need a blog, you need media relations. So part of it is being a creative thinker and looking at the problem instead of just saying, oh, we're going to write a press release and send it to 100 journalists. It's just not the way it works anymore, at least in, I think, larger scale companies, maybe locally. But so again, I think going back to the original point, it's so many things, but at the core of it, it's creativity and it's problem solving through the lens of the writing and, you know, the content development and figuring out, it's almost like reverse engineering, like figuring out which asset you need to tell the story as opposed to just saying, we're going to send out a news release.
You hit all of my favorite words.
Did I get all the buzzwords?
Creativity. That warms my heart. You said problem solving. Absolutely. I mean, there's not a day that goes by if you're in public relations that you're not solving some kind of
I always felt like a psychologist. I mean, honestly, it's like my graduate degree was in psychology, and I feel like I used all of, I mean, so much of it's just, you know, the other thing is being able to understand people and trends. I mean, this is the other part of public relations that doesn't get talked about, or just communication in general. Part of what you're doing is you're trying to emotionally connect with a customer base.
Right.
And you're also trying to look at all these disparate parts, all of this information, and connect the dots to something that matters today. And that is a big job, to have that much knowledge to know how to communicate something where you're, you know, I mean, the most brilliant PR people we know, and I say we because we know some really good ones, and, you know, unfortunately some really bad ones, but the really good, but the really good ones are the people who can take a topic, a macroeconomic topic, and tie it into something granular. That's the thinking part of it that I believe is often missing. And the really good PR people or communicators or even marketers know how to do that.
Well, that's that emotional connection and being relevant in somebody's world. There's things happening all around us, but there are certain things that that will resonate for every different person, whether it's some kind of news that's locally affecting us, or maybe it's national or regional. So I think that relevance is key. So is that your compelling story? Is that the whole emotional tug?
Well, you mean for clients or?
Yeah. Are you finding that when you can find that spot of relevance, emotion, you've got the data to support it?
Yeah, I think it's all of those things. And I think what, just philosophically speaking, I like to think of it as, I think that we get into a system where we look at things as dual, so either or. And I think what's really important is to look at things from a both and perspective. And as long as we can do that as communicators, who are largely creative driven, and we can say we need this and that and this and that, you know, it's not this either or scenario. So I think our job, whether you're on the writing side or the person who's pitching the story, is to, and this, by the way, goes for marketers and, you know, on the marketing side, the marketers have to look at comms and PR and say, how can we include everybody in the process so that everyone's aligning in the same direction?
Right. You know, people are standing there saying, we want to be a part of this. We are a part of this.
Yeah. And I think it's, and this is, I'm, you know, it's just such an old school mentality to put things in silos. It's like, we don't live in that world anymore. And that this is part of the beauty of data. You know, I'm not saying that data solves every problem, because it certainly doesn't. And it certainly also doesn't tell us exactly how to predict the future. That's not our job. Our job is to see and cull insights based on data so that we can make better decisions and have a better idea of where to spend the money and where we're going in the future. But I think the whole concept of saying, well, I'm in marketing, so I'm over here, and I'm in advertising, and I'm over here, and it's just like, it doesn't work. And this is, I mean, this is, I know the conversation I had with you when we did that interview in Times Square, it's the same thing. It's, you know, we really have to fight for inclusivity on all levels in communications.
Such a shame, like, we have to fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of the fun sometimes.
Roll up your sleeves.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what makes it interesting. It's like, if everyone got along all the time, like, what fun would that be?
Yeah. You know? So, Rebecca, you know, you're not, so you're PR, you're marketing, but you're also a writer. You have put on a different hat when you're at Entrepreneur, you're media. It's kind of interesting. I do the same thing. I'm a blogger for PR Expanded. I'm a podcaster. I feel like everybody's media today. It's not just journalists. It's not just bloggers. And there's all different kinds. Do you feel that we're all suddenly little media companies?
I think that brands that look at themselves as publishers and storytellers are going to fare much better in the next 5 to 10 years. I think that journalism is really suffering in many ways because of the democratization of self-publishing. I also, you know, one of my missions, I think, as a writer first, is to insist that writing is paid for. Part of the problem, and I'm, you know, I'm doing this, I also write for Inc. and Entrepreneur and handful of other publications, none of which I get paid for, by the way, but it's, there's a benefit to me in that it is good for just to keep my skills up and to stay relevant. Sure. But I do think, you know, journalism is a very specific skill, and we need journalism and we need good journalists and we need people who are reporting on facts on both sides. And I also think we need thought-provoking contributed content from experts. I think, so it's like, if I took a step back, what I would say is not that we need to all be media companies, but we need to know what we know and to speak the truth and to critically think about how it's affecting people. And I think that when, and you see this all, there's a lot of bad content out there. 80% of content is crap. If, I don't know if I can say that.
Word, and not the truth.
And it's not the truth. And so, so when you, and again, going back to a technology like Onclusive or GA, or, you know, there are many analytics platforms, for depending on what you need, but it's, you know, the brilliance of data is that it shows us what's good and what's not good and what's compelling and what's not compelling. And I think that, that more importantly than talking about, oh, we're a publishing company now, or we need content out there, it's what point of view do we have that we believe strongly in, that aligns with our brand values, that aligns with our customers, and how do we communicate in a way that's effective? I mean, and also don't, I mean, brand journalism, I believe in that term, but I don't think it's journalism. I think that it's like, that's a conundrum, like being a brand and writing content. It's like, it can't really be journalism, you know,
it's reporting,
it's industry reporting, and it's branded, and it's branded content. Yes. That's fine. But I think to dilute the practice of journalism, just like when PR gets diluted to someone, you know, it's like you see all these parodies about PR people who are just these dumb idiots running around hosting events. It's like, that's insulting, because that's not even what a PR person does. Like, PR people manage clients, they manage conversations, they have a really hard job. So I think at the same time, we have to be careful about, like, I would never say to someone, I'm a journalist. I'm not a journalist. I
don't have the credentials.
I'm a writer. I have experienced certain things in my career that I think I can share. So hopefully it helps people some way. But you know, I think it goes back to the issue of why we do need data, but also people should get paid if they're skilled at their jobs. And I think that, you know, I look at, when I was first doing research for WriteVest, I was looking at all these freelance job boards, and you're looking at, and I won't name any brand names, but, you know, people who are posting jobs for 1200 word researched articles, and the pay is $100. It's like, really? I mean, anyone worth their weight, anyone with, you know, that has training would never do that. And so it's like, it's again, it's like, look at what the value is. And if we have data on the back end that says, when we write this type of content with this type of writing, with this type of person, we can generate 150 leads to the site, which equals, you know, this amount of potential business converts to the brand. Right. Then you can go back and say, okay, well, we can afford to pay someone $1 a word or even 50 cents a word. So I think as a writer, and now, you know, half of my work now is creative, and it's not client work. It's, I'm working on, you know, book and film projects as a writer and as someone who's trying to get paid as a creative person first. And it's challenging, because when we work for free, when the industry works for free, then it sets a standard. So I think we have to go back, and we have to say, okay, well, you know, this is what the value is, because without the communication, without the brand, without the, you know, and messaging is what builds brand equity. It's not the product. It's not the engineers. It's not. I mean, mm-hmm. That was one of the biggest struggles I saw in the tech industry, is that everything's product driven.
Right.
An engineer trying to market something to a customer doesn't work.
It does not work.
Because they're brilliant at this thing. And some of them can cross over, but most of them don't, and that's fine. And so you need the communicators, that value that the communicators bring, is just as important.
Oh,
and so, you know, I'm preaching to the choir, but I think for anyone who's listening, who is struggling with understanding how to value, you know, what they're doing, it's, you know, it's like, it's really hard to know, but go out there and look at, you know, some of the industry standards, you know, and what, if you are a professional writer who's been published and who is like, you shouldn't be working for 10 cents a word.
No, I mean, you make so many great points.
It's yeah. So anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. Go back to my
soapbox. So Rebecca, I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts on this for a moment. We are going to just pivot a little bit into our break mode, where we're going to talk about a collaboration that I have with Routledge Publishing, because they are the publishers of my book, Answers for Modern Communicators. And I thought it would be fun if it's a Q&A book, and you know that, Rebecca, because
yes,
you're actually in the book. But I answered one of the questions, question 92, I've already answered, and it's about how do you share meaningful information when you have writer's block? So one of my tips was, when you have writer's block, sometimes it really helps to maybe take a little mini staycation where you can't go away, but you need a break and you want to turn off all technology, go to a museum or do something that's completely out of the realm so that you can get your mind off of your writing and to feel creative again. So what would be one of your tips when you have writer's block?
It's funny because I'm actually leaving for a writing retreat immediately after our interview and going away for 4 days so I can lock myself in a cabin and do some writing. That's one way. You know, for me, there's a couple things. One is just getting out in nature. It's kind of similar to what in just really like honestly, the phone thing is huge. Like I'm, you know, I turn off my phone for days at a time.
Oh, gosh, so smart.
And yeah, I think like the longest has probably been 4 days, 5 days, but getting out in nature always helps. Also for me personally, just reading really good writing. So I have a handful of writers that I really like and I have learned a lot from in terms of their writing. And so sometimes I just absorbing information and well-written books. I mean, I read a lot of books. It's funny. I don't really read a lot of news and I have a couple sources that are my go-tos, but I just read a lot of books.
Do you like fiction?
I like some fiction. I tend to read nonfiction, and memoir. I really like that. But I also I was a philosophy major in college, so I just have like stacks of philosophy books, which is really interesting. Now I'm reading a lot of, John Stuart Mill, and what's so funny is that it's just all relevant still. You know, it's like he wrote in like the 1800s. You know, so anyway, that's one thing I would suggest is go read a book, like turn the news off, turn off the stuff that's just this kind of like journalism or whatever, and get off Facebook. And you and I talked about this too, when we were both going through some personal kind of difficulties, is turning off social media for me was really important to my emotional and mental health. And I think it really reset the bar for how often I engage. And I don't engage a lot. I try to engage enough to people know I'm there and, you know, for things that are relevant. But I think that's a big part of the problem now, is it's just a lot of the, you know, things just being reset and repurposed and not really any real knowledge there.
Yeah. So. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing your tip. And I was 100% with you about getting off of social media when you're going through a tough time. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's pivot back into your story. You ever see that episode of Friends when you're carrying the couch up the stairs and Ross is going, pivot.
Yes. Pivot. Here we go. By the way, read the book, everyone who's listening, because it's a really good book.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. It's a great tool to have in your tool set, as a communicator. So Thank I just pitched you. Do you see how I did that?
So
you
don't switch the room. That was awesome. Man, you just
that's what friends are for.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah, let's show that book again.
Yeah, show the book again. You can send me my check later.
Yes. So let's get to the Rebecca under the script part of the show.
Here we go.
Yeah, I want to hear, and so do the listeners, I'm sure, about some of your learnings as you've gone from different businesses and experiences. What have you learned about yourself?
Well,
you want to share.
Yeah, no. Yeah, let me get out my laundry list. Well, I think the biggest thing I've learned is that I don't really know anything until I show up in a situation. And I think what I mean by that is, you know, we tend to be, we're kind of these programmatic creatures that want organization. And I think in business in particular, we set up systems to ensure that we get things done. But, you know, every day is a totally different emotion. It's a totally different need. It's a totally different client. And so this idea of kind of being radically present in every different moment has been probably my biggest learning over the years, which is you just don't know what's around the corner. And we have to be prepared to show up fully present and then to listen. And I spent a lot of years talking a lot more than I listen, kind of like I feel like I'm doing now.
That's okay. You're supposed to.
I'm like,
about you.
They don't let me out of the house for, my husband doesn't let me out of the house very much. So I've been talking a lot about this with one of my other clients, Marissa Riccardi, who you actually interviewed.
Oh, she's on the show.
Amazing.
Yes, the Riccardi Group.
This month is actually her fifth anniversary of Riccardi Group. It's just amazing what she's built. But,
nice.
You know, she really talks a lot about this idea of human-to-human marketing and not looking at marketing as B2C, business-to-business, or business-to-consumer or business-to-business, but looking at it as business-to-human. And I think behind every computer screen, every social media channel, every client contract is a person.
And when
we stop looking at people like transactions and we start looking at them in relationship, it's been a much more fulfilling, pleasurable experience as a business owner. And I think, you know, it's like part of that's maybe experience and age and starting to see things and experience things that you haven't experienced before. But, you know, and then just to be open to what comes and not to get your panties in a bunch, for lack of a better term, about things that don't work out. It's like, you know what? Like, clients are difficult. People say they're going to do things and they don't. People don't show up. Whatever. It's like, okay, that's their problem, not mine. And that's the other thing, is not taking stuff on and not taking on too much.
Right. Sometimes I think when you experience, I don't know if it's, I'm speaking for myself. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but when you have some kind of trauma in mm-hmm. your life, something happens, that's an event that is life changing, whether good or bad, you don't let the littler things, or actually don't let anything get to you, because you've been to this level of maybe sadness and back, or hell and back, whatever you want to say. Do you kind of feel like that is something that you can speak to in terms of what would have bothered me 10 years ago will not get to my core because just what I've experienced and what I know?
Yeah. I mean, the great silver lining of grief is that it really takes you to this place of kind of a new perspective on what matters. And I know, and yes. we both went through our pretty difficult personal tragedies around the same time and had a lot of conversation around this, but you know, it's like, first of all, you learn who your people are and who right. the people that you should be investing energy into as a result, because everything just kind of goes away. for me, I had a lot of short-term memory loss, which this sounds so strange, but it was this weird gift where it's like I was saying about just showing up. I mean, you just show up and you're like, I don't even necessarily remember what's going on, but I'm here now.
I'm here
and I'm listening and I'm going to just be here. And, that was a real gift for me, because I think 10 years ago I'm going to try to describe this like in a really kind of specific way. It's like I would walk in somewhere wearing a backpack of stuff, mm-hmm. and with all my expectations and all my thoughts and all my thinking, and this is what this should be. And I would sit down with my little backpack, and if whatever was happening wasn't fitting in the backpack properly, I would get upset, or I'd have a reaction, or I'd be more impatient. And now it's like I just try to walk in with as little as possible and just absorb and then decision make. And my patience, it's really interesting. I think we did talk about this. My patience level for most things has gone way up. Like I just have so much more patience. And in general, what I realize is that when I get upset, I'm just giving that energy to someone else, and that's not great. And it just causes disruption. But then my intolerance for certain things has gone way up. So it's like learning, and it's like I had said this to my husband when, you know, pretty soon after we met, it's like, something you should know about me is that I care about very few things a lot. And then there's like other things that I don't care what we're having for dinner. I don't care where we're going for dinner. I don't, whatever. But like when you hit thing that I care about, it's like, watch out, because so it's that, that's really the difference. It's like, I used to expend a lot of energy on a lot of different things and so much. And then you're just depleted.
Right.
And now
there are some big, important things.
But there are some really important things that you invest in, and you focus your energy and you say, okay, this is the thing that matters. And after enough like introspection and exploration, you know, you start to learn what those things are. So that's been, it's like, just leave the backpack at home, you know, like bring your little hip pack of stuff, you know, like hip packs are really in by
fanny pack.
Yeah. Fanny packs are really in, by the way. So this is also a fashion tip. This is like, disguising this as a fashion tip. But yeah. It's like, let the back, like
no back baggage. Maybe that should be a sign on the door in many a corporation or business. Leave the backpack at home.
Yeah. And also just it goes back to the people part of it. Just, you know, when we do this weird thing as humans where it's like, we get in it, we're in a certain business, and it's like, okay, this is how I'm supposed to talk, and these are the things I'm supposed to know. And I know, and it's like, just try to show up and just listen.
Notions, because don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and the other big takeaway from me, and I have said this to people so many times, which is that I really shifted in the last couple of years from this notion of, you know, we're human beings, not human doings. And if we're always in doing, we can't just be, and then we can't be, we're actually not showing up. So it's like, just instead of, you know, it used to be about how many tasks can I do in a day, or how much can I accomplish? And now it's kind of like, am I being who I want to be in this moment and doing the work in a way that is meaningful and has some, you know, hopefully positive impact?
Right. It's effective.
Yeah.
Which is much more, I mean, I would rather have the quality and being effective,
right,
investing in less than just doing a whole bunch of stuff and wearing that really heavy backpack.
Yeah. No heavy backpacks.
No, a little fanny pack or just very, very small wallet.
Yeah, exactly.
So another question for you, as a business owner, what do you think are really important characteristics of the leader and the business owner today? What does it take?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing it takes is a lot of humility. I mean, if you want to be a good leader, I think just being willing to to listen to what people are saying and not to, I mean, I feel like I'm just constantly learning from my clients, from, I don't have employees, I have contractors, but, and then from, you know, from my advisory work, I think it takes a tremendous amount of humility. I also just think it takes a lot of courage to be willing to step out and do something that other people aren't doing and to have integrity while you're doing it. I mean, there's so many ways, you know, to cheat and to, I don't know, just to say things that aren't true. I think that leadership, you know, is under real scrutiny at this particular point because we see so much, we've seen so much bad leadership. I think people really crave leaders who just stand by what they say. And the term authentic gets thrown around a lot. And I don't know even necessarily what that means. I think it's really hard to know if someone's being authentic because we don't know what someone's intention is. The only thing we have is what the only thing we can see is if someone is consistently the same person and if they continue to show up in a way that I think is like of service and full of integrity. And I think the best leaders that I've known or that have, you know, that I've been in the company with are those that are just consistent and they're consistently looking for ways to make customers' lives better, their employees' lives better, not to line their pockets. And, you know, I'm hopeful that this is maybe a new way of doing business in the future. But I think leadership is always, it's always going to suffer from bad actors, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's true. In every industry, there's great professionals and there's bad actors. So you look across the board, leaders, it's the same thing. I just feel from my own research that I've been doing with millennials, a lot of one-on-one interviews to build a new model that I call FEEL, which is very much about emotional intelligence. So it's face fears, engage with empathy, use ethics, and unleash the love. And millennials are screaming for more emotional intelligence.
I think that's true. And I've, you know, for as much disparaging, you know, the disparaging narratives out there about millennials, I think that they, and even the generation, I mean, I look at my niece and nephew who are, you know, 11 and 12.
So are they Gen Z?
If you're they're 11? Gen Z. And they just have this, I mean, it's like, I just look, and they just live in a different world. It's like things that were a thing when we were kids are just not even a thing. It's like they don't, it doesn't, their world is different. They're coming into the world differently. But I think millennials have a real opportunity to lead in a way that is like what you say, more emotionally intelligent driven. Mm-hmm. However, I will say that this culture of jumping around and feeling like the world is your oyster is, I think by the time you reach a certain age, you realize that like, yes, that's true to a degree, but you really just have to work hard and you really have to be consistent. And so if that can be managed along with kind of prioritizing emotional intelligence, I think this generation, the millennial generation has the capacity to really shift the leadership model. If they can stay focused.
Sure.
The jumping around thing is just not good for anybody.
Right. No, consistency. And I love what you said about being consistent, showing up, and serving others. That is just, all listeners out there, I'm sure, can appreciate what you've said. Rebecca, I can't even believe that we're ready to give some parting advice. This show flew by. So if you were just going to give some parting advice to our Women Worldwide listeners out there, what would you say about showing up and maybe transitioning career life? What's your best advice for them?
I think this is going to sound so cliche, but really just do what brings you joy and work with people and for people who are aligned with your value system, because life is just, it can be really long, but it's also really short in a lot of ways. And it's just, there's a lot of time, I think, that gets wasted on, you know, perseverating about, you know, what should, it's like, figure out who you are, what you like to do, and do the things that kind of naturally bring you joy. You know, I mean, that's a simple, kind of as simple as it gets. I wish it was more profound, but
no, I think
that's where I'm at.
From the heart. No, yeah. Joy and from the heart. And thank you so much for the advice. Last question, super easy. Where can people find out more about you and your company?
So rightvest.com. It's just pretty much how it sounds. I almost spelled it wrong. That would have been bad. Just like it sounds, WRITE vest.com. And it's all there. And you can reach me through that, probably the easiest way. And then Twitter, at Rebecca Iliff. So yeah, that's
and it. And they can also check out your entrepreneur articles.
Yeah. You know, Inc. and Entrepreneur. And then I'm actually writing for The Satirist now, which is really fun. Doing a lot of like comedy writing, which is great.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Great.
So lots of different stuff going on.
We'll be on the lookout. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Oh my goodness. Sharing your journey. Being my first video guest.
I know, you got me out of my box. Really. This is good. This is, we'll have to do it again.
Well, you look good out of the box. Despite the eye.
Yeah, I'm like, so much, look at my eye. Crying. No.
Well, it was wonderful to have you on the show.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Women Worldwide. We love hearing from you. So please keep the feedback coming. Let us know how you're feeling. Give us a shout out on Twitter, on Facebook. Write a review on iTunes. All of this is helping us to learn what you want to hear, the stories that you want us to share. And we also know that all of these guests, like Rebecca, give great advice and they're helping you to learn and grow. So friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.